From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. When states went after big tobacco in the 1990s with a giant lawsuit, it ended with a settlement of hundreds of billions of dollars and a slew of regulations and restrictions on tobacco. Now, with the cost of American obesity soaring, there's a push to use that model to go after big food. The food industry says, no way, food is not tobacco. But our carefully engineered and marketed hits of sugar, salt, and fat do have their consequences. This hour on Point, the push to sue big food for the costs of American obesity. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. Does this sound logical to you or ridiculous? Should big food help pick up the soaring cost of health care for the obese in America? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me first today from Houston, Texas, is Paul McDonald, a partner at the Valorum Law Group in Chicago. He's leading the push, proposing to state attorneys general, that they join to sue big food to help pay for rising obesity-related health care costs. Paul McDonald, welcome to On Point.
Thanks. Hi, Tom.
What's the case you make?
Well, I look at it from this standpoint. I think that no fair-minded, informed, or honest observer would contend that food manufacturers bear absolutely zero responsibility for the problem of obesity. So I believe that whatever level of responsibility that they do bear, supported by the evidence and taking into account personal responsibility, is their fair share of reimbursement owed to states for Medicaid.
Well, let's just back up and hold it right there. Why should they bear any responsibility? They don't make people eat anything. People have to eat, unlike tobacco. You don't have to smoke, but you have to eat. Is it really the food company's choice what people eat and how much of it they eat?
Well, again, Tom, I think, and the point I'm trying to make here is that it's not saying that the food companies are 100% responsible, just like I don't think it's fair to say that the individuals are 100% responsible.
Why do they have any responsibility whatsoever?
Well, because if you look at whether you look at some of the documents that have been produced or some of the research that's been done, I think it's fair to say that there's information out there that whether it be salt, sugar, or fat that's being manipulated or other ingredients, that there are things that do affect the health care of American citizens. And so, it's not a matter of saying that the food companies bear all responsibility. They don't. Clearly, they don't. I think, but it's also fair to say that individuals don't bear all the responsibility. I think there's a dividing line, and whatever dividing line there is, that's what I'm saying, is that whatever that point is, right, be it 25% that the food companies may be responsible for, that's money that's owed to taxpayers, because currently taxpayers are bearing 100% of the cost in the form of higher taxes or reduced services. And I don't think that's sustainable or fair.
We'll have to bore in on that 25% or any whatever percent you're suggesting there. What are you saying to states about what they ought to consider and why?
Well, what I'm saying is that the states ought to conduct an investigation. I mean, I think part of what's going on right now is people speculate about whether or not there's a link or whether or not there's proof. I'm saying there's no need to speculate because the states have the ability to conduct an investigation before filing any lawsuit. And depending on that investigation, if the investigation turns up nothing, then don't pursue anything. If it turns up something, then go there. Be very targeted about it. Be very specific. So I'm saying that you shouldn't file a lawsuit right now. You should do an investigation. Do your due diligence because the issue is too important when you look at tens of billions of dollars that are being spent to treat individuals under Medicaid for obesity, and you look at the fact that the obesity rate is projected to double by 2030. It's just too much money that taxpayers are either having to pay in the form of taxes or reduce services for it to be sustainable or not look at it.
So step one, you say, is investigate. But you're talking about more than step one. You're talking about a case. You're talking with 16 states. I'm reading here. How did you choose those 16 states? And what are you laying out for them as a possible lawsuit scenario?
Well, when you talk about actually, all I am talking about right now is an investigation. I mean, it's not, when you read the letter that I produced, and by the way, I didn't actually seek for the letter to be publicized. You know, somehow, some way, the Chamber of Commerce obtained a copy of it, I suspect perhaps through a FOIA request, and decided to write about it in their report, The New Lawsuit Ecosystem. So it's kind of interesting, and this is kind of something I didn't necessarily expect or want in terms of the publicity. But having said that, what I've always suggested first and foremost is that an investigation be conducted. Now, I've provided, I have some information as to what I think the legal theory that would allow for the states to go forward with this, which is very similar, although not the same, as the one that was done with state tobacco. But I've always counseled and still do that an investigation should be done first.
Yeah, but just take it beyond that, because, I mean, it's published. It's out there. Your letter to the Pennsylvania Attorney General says they're looking at a $3.7 billion budget shortfall in 2012. The state's total Medicaid burden in that year was $10 billion. You're saying to them, you could get a piece of this back from the food companies themselves. How?
The legal theory, you know, to be honest, is something that I'm only discussing with states or other law firms that are interested at this point. But here's the point. I think that to your point you made earlier, I'm talking about partial reimbursement, and I think that's a very key point. I am not suggesting that the food companies are 100% responsible. I'm not suggesting that there's no personal responsibility. I'm suggesting that there is a dividing line, and that we got to do an investigation to determine where the dividing line may be. And whatever that line is, the part that is responsible to the food companies is their fair share of reimbursement, so the taxpayers don't bear 100% of the cost.
What's your back of the envelope calculation here? What the ultimate settlement with tobacco was $260 billion or something like that. Very big industry. Food's a much bigger industry still. Even if it's just a percentage, are we talking numbers that would, in a consequential way, help states offset their Medicaid spending, let's say?
I think it would. I mean, because, again, here's the thing. I mean, I think the states, most state, budget folks would probably say anything could help, considering that, you know, what the options are. I mean, you look at the shortfalls that, you know, states obviously have an obligation to balance their budgets. Most of them do. So they're always looking at shortfalls and how to address that. I mean, instead of cutting education or cutting services to the elderly, if there were some contribution that they were getting to offset these costs, I think it would help them make better choices. In terms of how much that would be, I don't know. Now, one thing I will say is this, because you kind of made reference to it. It is a big industry. But what I'm also suggesting is that after you conduct an investigation, that you only look at whatever high-impact foods you may be able to identify. In other words, not all foods, obviously. And that then you further look at only the companies that have more than marginal market share in the affected Medicaid population. So, for instance, you would exclude small businesses. So you're actually, it's not nearly as big as I think people assume it to be. I'm actually counseling for a very targeted and refined approach. And frankly, I think, you know, in a sense, a conservative approach in terms of trying to find a way to provide some taxpayer relief based upon what, I say is not a sustainable current scenario.
A targeted and refined lawsuit against big food that would, even if it's just a fraction of a fraction, that quickly gets into many billions. Paul McDonald, please stand by. We want to hear more. Bruce Silverglade joins us right now from Washington. He's principal attorney at the Washington law firm of Olson, Frank, Weed, Terman, Matz, specializes in food industry clients. He gave a presentation last month to food industry attorneys laying out the kinds of litigation they could soon be facing. Bruce Silverglade, thank you very much for joining us. Does this make sense on the face of it? Big Tobacco was sued and lots of billions poured into states to help mitigate. Why not do the same with Big Food? What do you say?
Well, hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
Look, food is not tobacco. The case just simply isn't there to show that companies made their products addictive at the expense of public health. In the tobacco litigation, a very limited number of companies worked to hide the very risks of a single product known to be addictive and cause lung cancer. That isn't the situation here. There's no proof of addiction. There's no evidence of a cover-up. There isn't even a smoking gun. And that's why Mr. McDonald wants the state attorney generals to go on a fishing expedition on the basis of a hope and a prayer that some documentation would turn up that, frankly, would be used by firms such as Mr. McDonald's to bring class action litigations and remunerate the attorneys quite handsomely.
Now, we can see that, how that would pour money into attorneys' pockets. But, you know, you do have the former director of the Food and Drug Administration, David Kessler, who's written at length about food addiction, or what he called conditioned hypereating, foods engineered for hypereating response.
Well, yes, Dr. David Kessler, formerly the FDA, in his book, he actually says, quote, "I have deliberately avoided the term addiction because I thought it was distracting." So even the former FDA commissioner, who was one of the pioneers of the theory, distinguishes it from tobacco. And while he was FDA commissioner, he tried to regulate tobacco. So Kessler knows what he's talking about, and he sees there's a difference. And his book basically provides consumers with a series of individual steps they can take as individual persons to improve their diet. So that's Kessler's solution to
it. We have all read about the food, big food companies, you know, doing micro engineering to get that perfect maximum of sugar, salt, and fat that makes people just crave those foods. Could you see that being put together into a case that would be persuasive in a court of law?
Frankly, no. I mean, look, it's no big secret. Food companies want their products to taste good. And the fact that they would be doing research to do that is no surprise to anybody.
Paul McDonald, is that where you would begin if you were going to make this case? They're trying to make them irresistible, and when they do, boom, bring down the law.
Well, the first thing I'd ask Mr. Silverglade, is it his contention that food manufacturers bear absolutely zero responsibility for the problem of obesity?
Well, I think the food industry under the lead of the First Lady Michelle Obama has actually made significant strides in addressing concerns about childhood obesity. In fact, the newest federal government study shows that childhood obesity rates have leveled off. And so what the First Lady has urged by working with the industry and the response of the companies appears to be working. In talking about litigation would really put the industry just in a defensive posture, which would not be constructive and probably halt some of the improvements that are being made now due to the fear of litigation.
Bruce Silverglade, hold the thought right there. Paul McDonald as well. We're talking about the push to sue Big Food. You're having to hear KJ52 and his rapping about Mountain Dew and his addiction to it. Gimme that. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
I know I can overcome it.
Give me that Mountain Dew.
Give
me that Mountain Dew. I ain't playing.
I have a problem.
Well, KJ, I know that was painful to
it
talk about,
painful.
But you know what?
Sorry.
You can overcome this addiction.
I can't.
You just have to admit that you have a problem.
I got a problem. I just can't help it. Somebody help. I think I'm addicted. Every day I gotta just have it. I can't help it. It's just a habit.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the push to sue Big Food to pay for America's obesity. Lawyers sued Big Tobacco. Now they're looking at Big Food. And look around. You can see why it might occur to them. During the Super Bowl this year, an ad for Subway introduced a new sandwich, the Fritos Chicken Enchilada Melt, which includes a layer of Fritos in the sub. Olympic athletes shilled for the new sandwich.
Introducing the crunchy new Fritos Chicken Enchilada Melt at Subway.
Wait a minute, the Fritos go on the sub?
Really? You have got to taste it to believe it.
One bite and you can't resist.
You can't resist. How do you spell lawsuit? 2012, Taco Bell teamed up with Frito-Lay to create a Doritos nacho cheese flavored taco shell. Here's an ad from that.
It's taken Taco Bell years to perfect and you seconds to devour. Introducing the irresistible Doritos Locos Tacos. A taco supreme in a shell made out of real nacho cheese Doritos.
Irresistible. Big Tobacco was sued. Now they're talking about suing Big Food. Michael Moss has written a lot about this in his book, Salt, Sugar, Fat, How the Food Giants Hooked Us. We've talked to him. Democracy Now! Talked to him in March last year. Here's what Michael Moss had to say.
Salt, sugar, fat are the three pillars, the holy grail, if you will, on which the food industry survives. And through their research, they know that when they hit the perfect amounts of each of those ingredients, they'll send us over the moon. Products will fly off the shelves. We'll eat more. We'll buy more. And being companies, of course, that they will make more money.
We'll eat more. We'll buy more. Should they be sued? American obesity is costing a lot now. In healthcare terms, Paul McDonald is with Valorum Law Group in Chicago. They're big on this. They're going around the country talking to states saying, maybe we can do this. Let's think about it. Bruce, he joins us today from Houston, Texas. Bruce Silverglade is with us from Olson Frank, Weta, Terman Matz. Big firm often represents food industry clients out of Washington. He joins us from there today. Let's get a food and nutrition expert in the middle of this as well. With us right now from Durham, North Carolina, is Kelly Brownell, leading expert on obesity and nutrition policy, dean of the School of Public Policy, also professor of public policy, psychology, neuroscience at Duke University. Kelly Brownell, welcome back to On Point. Thanks very much for being here.
Nice to be here, Tom.
Are you sympathetic to the idea of suing Big Food, or does this just sound like lawyers looking to, you know, make a buck?
I'd be shocked if within a few years there aren't such lawsuits happening from the state attorneys general. And I think the points of objection that Mr. Silverglade raised were the same ones that were raised before the tobacco industry lawsuits happened, that there's no evidence of addiction. Well, that's wrong. There is plenty of evidence of addiction with food, plenty of good scientific evidence. in both humans and animal lab animal studies showing that food can hijack the brain to override personal responsibility and discipline. That science gets stronger almost by the day. He said that there's no evidence of cover-up. Well, I suspect when you get into the food industry records, you'll start to find things that the food industry has known for many years, that they can override will and discipline and do things to the brain by manipulating the constituents of the food in order to maximize consumption. So I don't think you need to say that food is tobacco or like tobacco in order to make a case for this. And like I said, I'd be shocked if this isn't in our future.
Can we zero in on that engineering of food? I mean, look, some people have really liked food for a long time. And unlike tobacco, though, we have to eat. So you can't criticize someone for making food or bringing food to market. If it can be addictive, as you suggest, are you saying it's addictive by design or just human beings like food?
Well, that becomes part of the culpability issue about what did the companies know and when, and have they used the language of addiction inside the companies as they've been manipulating the constituents of the food. And only time will tell, and the lawsuits will probably bring out that information. But I think where the industry, I mean, every industry manipulates the properties of its products to make them most desirable. A car company has the most desirable paint to make you want it, and that's true. You know, a computer has properties that make you want it. So those are all good things for consumers overall. But when they cross that line and they start to endanger public health, which is the case with at least some foods, then I think government and the courts have a right to step in. And that's what I expect will happen. And in the places where I think the companies are most vulnerable is the intentional manipulation of the ingredients to thwart biology and to override the natural systems people have to eat the right amounts. And second is the marketing that they do of their products, especially to children. And these two things, I think, do permit the opportunity, if the state attorneys general wish to do it, and I expect they will, to assign blame to a particular company for a certain degree of health consequences, and then the states may have the right to recoup the cost.
Paul McDonald says, well, let's check it out. Let's do some research on this and see what the findings are. You're in this field already, Dr. Brunel. Are there findings out there that suggest this kind of intentional manipulation, as you say, to thwart biology, override will and discipline?
Yes, I believe that's the case. Everybody will have to look at the evidence and decide whether it's robust and convincing enough, but there are lots of scientific papers on what food does to the brain, so that's issue number one. And issue number two is how can you assign blame to a particular company or a particular foods of a particular company, given that people are eating hundreds of different things in their diet ordinarily? And that's the sort of thing where what you do, and I think the science is getting close to being able to do this already, to figure out how much in a given state, let's say, let's just take Massachusetts as an example.
Okay.
The state attorney general could probably declare that obesity and diabetes and other diet-related diseases are costing the state X amount in health care costs. You could then figure out what particular groups of products are contributing to that overall category, let's say fast foods or sugared beverages, and then you can figure out what a particular company is contributing to the overall sales of those within the state, and that's how you establish the degree of blame for a company. So Mr. McDonald is correct. There's no way you'd assign blame for the food industry for 100% of the obesity problem, but do they deserve some blame, and that's what the courts will ultimately have to decide.
Kelly Brunel, stand by in Durham, North Carolina. Paul McDonald, Bruce Silverglade, I want to bring that to you. I want to bring our listeners in as well. Let's get a call from Madison, Wisconsin. Michael is calling. Hi, Michael, you're on the air. What do you think?
Hi, Tom. Wonderful show. I'm just surprised, you know, driving around here listening to this again, you know, now we're going to turn around and take away any personal accountability for the individual has in making right food decisions. And let's start a lawsuit, let's get lawyers involved, and let's start suing people for making bad decisions. So here I am sitting at home, fat, overweight, major health problems that I've already got. I'm consuming all these foods, but wait a minute, it's not my problem anymore because now I've got lawyers out there to prove that it's not my fault I'm this way, it's the food company's fault that I'm this way.
Well, I mean, Michael, I take your point. It is kind of a head-scratcher when you first hear it. Of course, it's still going to be your problem. If you're overweight and unhealthy, that's not going to make your life fun. Does it change? Would it change your reaction, Michael, if it was proven that food companies were micro-designing some of these foods to just be, you know, practically addictive? Would that change your outlook or not, Michael?
I think it actually gives me more reason to keep eating it, because then it takes it. It's not my fault anymore. I'm not to blame with my food choices. The food companies are.
So should we sue them?
I think it's ridiculous to sue them. I think you have to hold the person who's eating it personally responsible for what they're doing, and not the people who have it out there. It's your choice of whether you eat it or not.
Even if it's designed to be addictive, and I'm not saying that's proven, but if it were, I mean, we go after heroin dealers because they sell an addictive product, Michael.
Well, yeah, but you're talking about an illegal product versus a legal product. Now, if they find that something's addictive to a certain point, and they say, look, this is beyond, they set a level and say, all these products have to meet this level, or,
yep.
And then the companies continue to produce them, then, you know, by all means, then they're negligent. But at this point, there's no national standard for that, so it's personal choice.
Yeah, personal responsibility, please, says Michael in Madison, Wisconsin. Paul McDonald, you hear that. What do you think you have to prove in order to make a case here? Do you have to prove that the foods being sold have been deliberately engineered to be essentially addictive?
Well, I don't necessarily think you have to prove addiction, but here's the thing I would say to Michael. I'm not saying, to be very clear, I'm not saying that there is no personal responsibility. I think there is, okay? All I'm saying is that unless personal responsibility is 100%, I don't think anyone really believes it's 100%, then there must be some percent that is responsible for the food companies, okay? And I still haven't heard an answer from Mr. Silverglade to that point. I asked him if it was his contention that the food manufacturers bear absolutely zero responsibility for the problem of obesity, and he dodged that question. You know, the one thing he did say I thought was interesting, and I agree with him on this, I agree with Mr. Silverglade on this, is that, you know, the food companies have made some progress, and they should be lauded for that. Their health product modification, their health care modifications are actually a good thing. I'm not against that. But I do suggest this. It also seems to me to say that they recognize that they bear some responsibility, because if they didn't bear any responsibility, why would they make changes? So, again, I asked Mr. Silverglade, you know,
well, let me clarify, big food Paul.
Bruce, please, what about that, Bruce? Zero responsibility for the problem of American obesity in our food companies?
The food industry bears zero responsibility for trying to make their foods tastier. There's nothing wrong in that. And what the First Lady's trying to do is lead a cultural change. And so, for example, we've seen a decrease in carbonated soft drink consumption among teenagers and young people.
You know, everybody likes that, and good for her. But let's just cut straight to it without elaboration, a yes or no. Does the food industry in this country bear any responsibility for American obesity, Mr. Silverglade?
They bear no legal responsibility for American obesity.
Do they bear any functional or practical responsibility for it?
Well, functional responsibility, the food industry is delivering the products that consumers currently want. When we see campaigns like the White House Let's Move campaign aimed at reducing childhood obesity, we see the beginning of a cultural change where consumers start to ask and demand for different foods.
But people want heroin. Some people want heroin. That doesn't absolve heroin dealers in our country for some responsibility.
No, I don't think people want heroin. I don't think that's a correct statement.
Well, I mean, once they've had it, they want it. They'll pay a lot for it.
I think when people want something else, the food industry delivers those reformulated products and has done a tremendous job over the last 5-10 years or so in doing that.
No, we've got that message, but it's this legal question here. Kelly Brunell, in legal terms, Bruce Silverglade says no responsibility. You're our nutrition guru. In terms of the design and marketing of these food products, do you think the American food industry has any responsibility for the problem of obesity in this country?
No, that's not even a close call. Of course they do. I mean, if you think about the way they market the foods, the way they price them, The way they go after our children at incredibly young ages to try to develop brand loyalties for things like fast food. Think about Ronald McDonald. Think about the Coca-Cola polar bears. You can go on and find lots of examples of these things where kids are getting recruited into an unhealthy lifestyle. Now, again, that doesn't mean the parents have no responsibility or when those kids grow up that they have no responsibility at all. But to say that the food industry has no responsibility is really off base, I believe. And I think what Mr. Silverglade is doing, trying to tie the food industry to what Michelle Obama is doing.
Well, they are tied to it. I mean, they have cooperated with her to some extent.
Right? Yeah, but if you go in and look at what Michelle Obama has said in her speeches, she's actually been quite critical of the food industry in many cases, especially for things like marketing to children. So the food industry is doing a lot of things that are meant to look good. Some of them are good. But it doesn't absolve them of responsibility for selling an awful lot of unhealthy food and doing it in ways that override biology, override personal responsibility, and put people at health risk, especially children.
Are you worried in public policy terms that if this, I mean, this would be down the road, but let's imagine this is successful. And now, you know, for every Twinkie that's sold, money is dropping into some states' coffers. Is it? Do you fear, Kelly, that states could become dependent on this kind of subsidy from lousy food? You know, and everybody gets tied into the system of keeping Americans obese.
Yes, I do think that's somewhat of a risk. If you look at the way the tobacco money has been spent by the state, some states like California have used the money exceptionally well and have used it for anti-smoking programs and have further reduced their health care costs. Other states have just absorbed the money and used the money in lots of different ways. So if there is money to come from an effort like this, then how the states use it does become a real issue, no question about it.
Lucius in Brookline, Massachusetts. Lucius, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'm all for suing the food companies for their role in promoting food addiction and for their role in making it hard to find good food that's good for you. Hmm. But there's one thing that you got to do before suing them, and that is stop subsidizing them and to get them out of government, too.
Stop subsidizing the crops that are the raw material of obesity-making food. Lucius, that's an interesting point. I mean, Paul McDonald, how can you go after big food companies for what they're producing and producing at a fairly inexpensive, maybe sometimes the cheapest food, when it is federal government policy to effectively subsidize a lot of these foods that are turned into sweeteners and more that aren't necessarily good for your health?
Well, I don't know if that's necessarily the case in the particular foods that we would look at.
Because, corn, again, fructose.
Well, I understand that, but I guess my point is this, is that I don't come at this with any preconceived notions as to what foods or types of foods you'd be looking at as contributing to the problem. That's the reason why I counsel the idea of doing an investigation. So I don't have any predetermined notion of what, you know, other than, for instance, I guess, and Dr. Brownell may agree with me on this, I mean, there's some information that sugar-sweetened beverages are clearly linked to the problem of obesity and diabetes. So that might be considered the low-hanging fruit, no pun intended. But I don't come at this with any preconceived notion, so I would hesitate to make a statement about what should or shouldn't be subsidized if I don't know what contribution those crops or those products may have in the actual foods that may be contributing to the problem.
Well, Bruce, are you giving a heads up to your food industry client saying, watch out, you may not like it, but this looks like it may well be heading your way?
Well, I think it's certainly something that in speeches that I've made to food industry lawyers and executives that I certainly do want to alert them to the kind of plans that Paul is urging on the attorney generals. But believe me, this information has been around since at least 2009, and if there was any evidence of malfeasance, the certain attorney generals would have been investing this a long time ago. They have very talented staffs, dozens and dozens of attorneys, and they would have been on this years ago without any urging from an outside plaintiff class action law
firm.
Well,
sometimes things just take time to get up on the rails. We'll see where this one goes. Attorneys Bruce Silverglade and Paul McDonald, please stand by. Kelly Brownell at Duke University. We're talking about the push to sue big food. Hot Cheetos and Takis behind us here. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Hot Cheetos and Takis. I can't get enough of them Hot Cheetos and Takis. Got my fingers staring red and I cannot get them off me. You can catch me in my coupe eating Hot Cheetos and Takis. Snack, 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 snack.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the push to sue Big Food to pay for America's obesity. Lawyers sued Big Tobacco. Now they're looking at Big Food. Paul McDonald is with us from Valorum Law Group in Chicago, with us today from Houston, Texas. His outfit is going around the country talking with state's attorneys general, saying, hey, look, we did this with tobacco, and there may be an opportunity to do the same here, offset some of those giant Medicaid health care costs, no small portion of which are pouring out of exploding American obesity. Bruce Silverglade is with us from Olson Frank. We Determine Matt's Washington law firm with a lot of food industry clients, saying this is not like Big Tobacco, he says. No proof of addiction here. And this is not a road to go down. Kelly Brunell is with us from the School of Public Policy. He's dean there at Duke University. He's paid a lot of attention to big nutrition and obesity issues. And he says, well, you hear him. He says there is some responsibility here in how these foods are made and marketed. Lots of response online. Paul, Kelly, I got to say an awful lot of this online response is saying, people, be responsible for yourself. Bob says, grow up, people. Take responsibility for your life. Jeremy says, nobody thinks fast food is good for you. Nobody thinks getting hit in the head repeatedly is good for you. Don't need a label or a lawsuit to tell me that. Mandy in Waukesha, Wisconsin. Mandy, you're on the air. What do you think?
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
And I absolutely agree. You know, people have to take responsibility for themselves. I'm not physician assisted, and I see that in the healthcare, in the patients I see all the time. But I think we're losing the battle individually, and I think that as a group of consumers, I think we're losing the battle. We can't make these changes broad scale where food industry is going to make changes on the grocery aisle. I just last week, I saw a four-year-old who was 80 pounds. I have a bachelor's in nutrition, wow, a master's in nutrition,
yeah,
and my husband's on, in the food industry and is on the other aisle. I believe that we're going to need laws to make changes, and I think we're losing the battle against obesity.
So what about this approach? You know, go after them like we did tobacco. Do you want to regulate maybe up front what food companies make, what kind of food, or is it better just to hit them with a stick of big cost and trust that they'll figure it out, Mandy?
I really believe that it's going to take more than just our individual and consumer approach. I think we need to have some more broad-scale laws. It's just I'm a parent, too, and right now, I feel I have control over my kids' choices of their food, but I feel like I'm worried that I'm going to lose that battle with them. It's just,
yeah,
there's just too many bad choices out there food-wise, and I don't see a consumer drive to change those.
Bruce, so thank you for your call, Mandy. I mean, Bruce Silverglade, you must be sympathetic to that. I mean, after all, look around this country. We've got a terrible obesity problem. Obesity comes from what? From lack of exercise, but number one, from what we eat. And yes, there have been changes in some of those food lineups that companies offer, but still, overall, if you look at what's on the shelves, you got to be sympathetic with Mandy, Bruce.
Well, there actually, I hear what Mandy's saying, and there are new laws on the books. There's new regulations in the works. Congress required chain restaurants who serve standardized menu items to provide calories, and many listeners may have started seeing those disclosures already on restaurant menu boards and menus, the calories.
But look at our waistlines. I mean, it's clearly not enough.
No, it's clearly not enough. The Food and Drug Administration has tentatively concluded, and there's some disagreement about this, but the FDA has tentatively concluded that partially hydrogenated vegetable oils are no longer safe to use in food. That's being challenged by some companies and trade associations, but the FDA is trying actively regulating in the area. The FDA is proposing a revamp of the nutrition facts panel that is on practically all food products sold in the grocery store. One of the changes is rumored to be making the calorie disclosure a lot larger and more conspicuous. So there are efforts to regulate and legislate in the area. The lawsuit idea, though, is just even dismissed by the Center for Science and the Public Interest, an advocacy group known for suing the food industry over a host of marketing issues. They were quoted in Politico last week as saying that if the Attorney General's asked CSPI about this, we would tell them to run the other way. So as far as the litigation idea that is the basis of your show today, it's just a no-go.
Kelly, why bring out the big stick of a lawsuit threat when there are a lot of little things maybe that we could do, you know, calorie counts and gradual reforms we could do to get a healthier food supply?
The only way you're going to address the nation's nutrition problems is to do a lot of different things at the same time. And I don't know that anybody claims that any one thing, including lawsuits, would solve the problem. So you have to do these things in concert. If you look at the way the American eating has changed over the years, if I think back to when I was a boy, you basically ate three meals rather than ate all day long. Taco Bell has started a campaign they call the fourth meal, which is to persuade people to eat fast food after midnight.
Yeah.
It was some years ago the companies did what people thought was crazy, introduce breakfast at fast food restaurants, and now look how common that is. Car companies will lose market share if the cup holders aren't big enough to hold these massive drinks. So you can see one thing after another that has eroded what used to be a pretty healthy eating pattern. And to turn these things around will not be easy, and no one thing is going to do it. You have to do a lot of different things. But you don't not do anything just because you have to do a lot of things.
But Bruce Sifferglade says they're not doing nothing. Things are going on already. Why pull the sort of nuclear option out here of a tobacco-sized lawsuit?
No, I don't see it as a nuclear option. If the companies are doing things that they should be held accountable for, and the courts would ultimately determine whether that's the case, why not do it? And you do that in concert with having better nutrition in schools and limiting marketing directed at kids, putting calories on labels and things like that. So just because the companies do a few good things, and I applaud, I'm delighted they're doing those, doesn't mean that all the negative things that they're still doing have to be overlooked.
Paul McDonald, in the big tobacco case, there emerged tons of evidence that scientists and researchers for tobacco companies had put a lot of effort into maximizing the addictive quality of cigarettes. Do you think that there's evidence out there of big food engineers, sitting around high-fiving when they figure out how to get more cheese and sugar and salt and therefore more repeat business from their buyers, Paul?
Well, that's the point of doing the investigation, which is it's interesting to me that everyone, not everyone, but the folks who are defending the food industry, like Mr. Sifferglade, want us to just make decisions based upon speculation. We don't know. We don't know what the industry knows. That's the whole point of doing the investigation. If you do the investigation and it turns out that the food companies are as innocent as Mr. Sifferglade would have us believe, then you don't pursue anything. But if you do the investigation, you find something out, then that's, in my opinion, a reasonable inquiry that you should be taking into account. Because keep in mind, here's the thing that's at stake here. Right now, taxpayers are responsible for 100% of the cost associated with obesity. And that comes from either higher taxes or reduced services or both.
Why taxpayers? Why not insurance premium payers? Why do you say taxpayers?
I say taxpayers because we're talking about Medicaid in particular. This is not about private action. This is about an action to recover money for state treasuries. So we're talking about Medicaid alone. And so we're talking about taxpayers being 100% responsible currently. Again, that means higher taxes or reduced services or both. Now, I would ask Mr. Sifferglade if he thinks that the current system where food companies are 0% responsible in terms of the cost, if he thinks that is a fair and sustainable system.
Bruce Sifferglade?
Well, what I said is that food companies are zero responsible as a legal matter, and Mike Moore, the former attorney general from Mississippi who led the state charge against the tobacco industry, agrees with me. He says he's quoted as food and tobacco are fundamentally different.
That's not the question.
Well, in terms of
corporate social, it's not. Okay, we're not talking about whether they're different. We're talking about, first of all, we haven't done an investigation yet, so you're being disingenuous when you suggest that there's no information out there because we don't know that. With all due respect to Mr. Moore or to the Center for Science and Public Interest, they don't know it either because an investigation has not been done. The question is, do you think it's fair that taxpayers cover 100% of the cost associated with obesity in the form of higher taxes, reduced services, or both, and the food companies pay absolutely zero?
Mr. Sifferglade.
Companies are investing hundreds of millions of dollars in reformulating products to make them more healthy.
Sifferglade.
No, I think we hear it. Bruce, but what about it? Let me put it this way. These companies, sell this food, and there's a lot of obesity in this country that clearly results from what Americans are eating. It's the food they're selling. Are they getting a free pass in the same way that tobacco companies got a free pass for dealing with the cost of cancer?
No, because in the case of tobacco, it was known and proven that cigarette smoking was inextricably linked to lung cancer and other diseases. There was a small number of companies involved. Nicotine was clearly an addictive drug, and that's just not the case here at all. We differ in all of those respects when it comes to the food industry. And major members of the food industry, many companies, large and small, have taken the issue on as a matter of corporate social responsibility and voluntarily have changed their marketing to children and support.
Yeah, in a matter of degree, but we still see what's on television and we still see what's on the shelves. Kelly Barnell, do you think that there's no legitimate comparison between the dynamic with the tobacco industry and health and our food industry, big players in health?
I think there are a lot of similarities. If you look at the tactics that the tobacco industry used to fight off public health measures and then put next to it a list of the things the food industry is doing, you can basically check every box. The behavior of the industries are quite similar. And my guess is that the public will start to get familiar with this fact, will start to object to it, and that will embolden the public officials to take action to try to recover some of the costs that one might assign to these companies. And, you know, back to the personal responsibility argument, which just comes up time and time again, even in the show, companies maximize the sale of their products. Nobody blames them for that. That's what they're put on earth to do. But when that starts to hurt people, and there is culpability that one could assign to the companies for doing it because they're creating products that, if consumed, might be unsafe, or if there's the exploitation of children or a number of other things kick in, then we start to get upset with what the companies are doing. And I think we're marching closer to that every day. And so I would be shocked if you go down the road 5 years or 6 or 7 and don't see such lawsuits. And I'd be very surprised if Mr. Silverglade isn't counseling the companies on this. I mean, he might say on the show that there's no legal basis for this, but my guess is that if he's doing his consulting with the companies adequately, he's probably telling them that you better watch out. This is coming down the road.
Let's go to Kevin in Normal, Illinois. Kevin, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Glad you guys got to the culpability of the consequence of low-quality food and diet rather than looking for the intent. And so there's a consequence. Mr. Brownell can speak endlessly on the consequence of low-quality food and that there is no consequence for big food right now. So that's one, whether it's doesn't really need to be punitive, but at least some cautionary change in how it's marketed and delivered, particularly around our children. But part two, really, the second question is really around Mr. Silverberg insinuated that the individuals are asking for this food and that if they ask for different food, the companies will do it.
Yeah.
In test marketing foods, they look for the most addictive response from the test market. Are people really asking for fried pork rinds and double Mountain Dew? The food companies formulate this and put it out.
I mean, pork rinds fried were out there before big food, but on the other hand, you're quite right. They're looking to sell, and they know the formulations that will make things sell. What's the vulnerability here, Bruce? If this does get up on the rails, Kelly Burnell's been in this world a long time. He says he sees it coming. If it gets up there, do you think you can go into a court of law and whoop this, Bruce?
Well, all I could say is listen to what the Center for Science and the Public Interest is saying. They're not interested in pursuing this route. The lead state attorney general on the tobacco litigation says it's a no-go. So, yes, I'm certainly informing food companies. Mr. McDonald's is out there and trying to talk to the state attorney generals. I don't think the state ADs are buying it. And I just add, the food industry has spent hundreds of millions of dollars in reformulating products, changing their marketing, changing the serving size container of products, offer smaller serving sizes. That's money, hundreds of millions of dollars, maybe billions. I don't have the exact information. It's a trade secret, obviously. But
No, we take that, and you've pointed that up, but still we do see what's on the shelf and what's in the ads. Paul McDonald, what do you think is going to be the trigger here? If this happens, will it be because of some scientific argument that's made, a fiscal argument that's made? Is it a political issue? Is it about Americans wanting a lawsuit?
You know, it's just not sustainable, our current system. Okay. You know, tens of billions of dollars are being spent every year on Medicaid costs related to obesity. That is coming 100% from taxpayers. Again, that means higher taxes or reduced services, less spending on education, on elderly and disabled. You know, we're living in a society right now where everyone's concerned about what goes on in government budgets. Okay, all I'm saying is that we should do an investigation, which, by the way, the comments that Mr. Silverglade attributes to the Center on Science and Public Interest and Mr. Moore, they haven't done an investigation either. I mean, no one's done an investigation. I'm saying do the investigation. If the investigation bears out that the food companies bear some responsibility, then whatever that level of responsibility is, be it 10%, 20%, 30%, that's their fair share of reimbursement back to the public. And I still haven't heard an answer from Mr. Silverglade as to whether or not he thinks it's fair for taxpayers to bear 100% of the cost, to pay higher taxes, to have reduced services for the obesity issue without Big Food making one contribution.
Well, we'll see where this goes. I mean, maybe the bigger question at this point is, will any state's attorney general sign on? So far, nobody. But we can hear the push. We hear the logic in it, whether or not that logic is bought and pushed in the end. Well, we'll be watching. Paul McDonald is looking to do it. He's with Valorum Law Group in Chicago. Paul, thank you very much for joining us today. Bruce Silverglade has joined us from Olson Frank, Wieda, Terman, Matz, law firm in Washington. Mr. Silverglade, thank you for your time today.
Thank you.
Kelly Brownell at Duke University's dean there of the School of Public Policy, Big in Nutrition. Kelly, thanks as always for joining us. Great to have you here.
Thank you, Tom.
Listeners, thanks a lot for your insights today as well. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.